Hello there, and welcome to Quite So. I am your host, Dada. Don't forget that the podcast airs on Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio, Amazon, as well as other podcast compiling apps. And you also find me on YouTube. I am trying today something new on YouTube where I am putting up the video recording of this interview I had today. So if you want to see the video recording, you could check that out on YouTube. My channel is titled I Read Aloud. You'll have to look in the search box for at, put the at sign first, at I Read Aloud, and you'll find me there immediately. I am also a writer, not only a podcaster. I've been writing modern day fairy tales recently, and I post them also on YouTube. You can find them there under the playlist, Why Is Love So Hard? So I urge you to visit my website, dadaisms.com, because on that website, you can link to all my platforms and check out all that I do. Today's interview is with Pia Lichter, who is a creative partner, certified coach, and author of Welcome to the Creative Club. She is also the founder of Collective Studio. She's a New Yorker, Quebecoise, and she's been a nomad most of her life. Recently, she landed or grew roots in Denmark for the past 15 years. She is also an award-winning creative director for some of the biggest brands in the world. And Pia currently co-creates Wild Visions Adventures with unconventional dreamers and doers. And I'd like to believe I'm one of them. So without further ado, let's begin with our interview. Hello, Pia.
Hi, Dada. How are you? So nice to be here with you.
I am so looking forward to our interview today and to our talk. Pia Lichter, you are a New Yorker, a Quebecoise who is living in Copenhagen, who has had a bit of a nomadic life, lived in different places. Let us know a bit about how your background and your nomadic life has affected where you are today.
Ooh, girl, we're starting with
Broad
big
question.
questions. Okay. Well, I think growing up and moving in between eight different elementary schools and the eight and high schools, both combined, sometimes it feels like even more, and moving every year, every 2 years, I think it shaped who I am as a person. It shaped me in so many ways. It gave me gifts, with all the gold, there's always a flip side of a little bit of shit on the underside, but so it gave me both. The gifts are this ability to be able to adapt and do what I call shape shifting as well. So being able to read a room, read energy, read people, and figure out who I needed to be in the space to kind of fit in, to survive, to thrive, to be okay, and to make it in a new place. So there's a bonus, there's an A and a B side to that, if you know what I mean.
Did you feel as you were bullied, in schools or wherever you went, as the new kid? Was that something in your scenario?
No, I had a pretty probably because of moving and because of my mom always was fiercely independent, and she wanted me, even from a really young age, to also be independent. So she encouraged me, maybe a little too young, to take care of things, to do things on my own. I don't know if it was just a consequence of the 80s and parenting in the 80s or what it was, but it's just. I had a problem when in first grade, something was going on in class. I don't remember what it was. And I said, Mom, I'm problem. Can you help me? And she said, No, you just go talk to the principal and you work it out yourself. You could do it. And I'm like six. So she instilled that in me. So I think I had kind of this strength, non-bullying, like non-target kind of thing. Like that's just not, I wouldn't tolerate it. So I don't remember it happening. I stood up for myself and I held my ground. So There's a story as also in the book where I was being bullied. I think I was in first or second grade. Me and my, not even bullied, I was threatened. Me and my friend Caroline, and this little boy, it was in Brooklyn in PS 321, and this little boy picked up a rod off the streets of Brooklyn and like threatened us with it, a metal rod. And I just had my hands on my hips and said, go ahead, hit me. I promise I'll tell the principal and you'll be in big trouble. And the boy like dropped the rod and ran away. And my mom was actually watching that. I don't think I would have remembered it unless she loved that story so much. She would like repeat it again, imitating my lisp and like my lopsided pigtails and my hands on my hips.
My
And I
fearless
think
girl, of course, you're so
she
proud.
was so proud. I think it also made her feel like, okay, she's good. She can take care of herself. Good. That's what she wanted from me, for me in my life. So the bullying wasn't a part of it. I was pretty good at learning, okay, what's cool? What do I need to do to adapt to make friends? I learned how to make friends really quickly. I learned how to build deep connections even for a short period of time. And then I had to learn how to let go. That one was harder. That was especially as I was in, high school, because in high school, everything's changing, your body's changing, your hormones. You really want a stable environment, like the same friends, the same people. And I didn't really get that. So that's when moving got especially tough. And learning to let go of my friends and needing to move to a new high school was a tough memory, like a tough one. But I did. I learned how to do that. So I think they gave me, being nomadic gave me superpowers, but also it gave me autopilot behaviors. So when things wouldn't go right, or if life took a turn for the worse, my normal re react response would be, or actually reaction, be like, okay, let's go. Where to next? And I wasn't even aware of it, because that's what I learned. My mom loved do-overs. It's like something wasn't working out. Let's go. Let's leave. We're gonna go someplace else. And then we're gonna change it up. And then we're gonna be in a whole new world. You know what I mean? It's like a but it keeps you kind of on the surface and in like a honeymoon
Because you're also
phase.
like a problem solver all the time, and you're looking for the bright side of things, and yes, it doesn't allow to connect with your darkness, your fears, your inhibitions, your anxieties. So, yeah, I get
True. And that saved me often, because having that kind of sunny disposition, like, yeah, tomorrow is coming and the future will be different and we'll see, everything can change. So it gave me some lessons. And then, as I said, sometimes there's some shadow in it too. Like sometimes I never learned how to stay. It took me being much, much later in life to realize that I had a choice. It took me going to therapy and having my therapist say, because I wanted, after I got divorced, my instinctual reaction was, okay, done with Copenhagen. Let's move to Paris. Paris, let's not deal with any of this torment and pain that's going on in my body and my life at the moment. Let's just go. But I wasn't aware that that was my sort of autopilot response until my therapist looked at me and said, yeah, you could do that. You could keep moving for the rest of your life every couple of years. And I'm not judging you. There's nothing wrong with that. Or you could choose how to learn to stay and develop a deeper connection with yourself and a place and people. And maybe that's the new thing. And it was in that moment that she made me realize that I had a choice. And when I saw the choice, I was able to consciously make one. Okay. Yeah. I want that. I want to learn how to stay. I never did that before. Yeah, that sounds like a challenge and an adventure. Let's do that. And that was 15 years ago, and I'm still here. So I
And
think
now
I've
you
done
have a
it.
partner and you have two kids. And so
Exactly.
basically, the staying part paid off in the
Yeah, it did. Well,
end.
I guess it's also a reminder that we get to choose, without judgment. Like maybe there is another version of me on another timeline who's still moving and who was in Paris and who loved it and was a bohemian in Paris and then moved to Beirut or moved wherever, and that's okay too. But I think it's more about conscious choice. Like there's not a wrong or right. It's just, am I making this choice about my life consciously? Am I aware of it? And I think that was a big takeaway for me.
After high school, you studied marketing.
Actually, I studied English language arts, which is interdisciplinary language, literature, arts, and writing in one program in my undergrad in New York City in Hunter. And I mean, my love of writing had always, and creativity had been around since I was as little as far as I can remember. My dad is an abstract painter, he's an artist, and he would paint on Manhattan, Lower East Side in our loft, and I would draw and write stories, and it was just a part of life. So I think it was always in me, and it was something that I wanted to be able to continue to do, not just in my private time, but also in whatever I chose to focus on in my career eventually.
Did you suppress your writing and creativity at some point in your life when you were doing other things? Or
Oh,
did you continue
definitely.
doing that?
Oh, I don't know if maybe I suppressed it, but again, I wasn't aware. I think it was suppressed. You know, back to the nomad, moving around a lot and being in new environments and growing up in a chaotic but loving but very chaotic home, I learned how to be outside myself. You know what I mean? Like I'm in the world, I'm managing everything outside, and sometimes it also looks like adventure, like, oh, I'm getting to know new people, and I'm in, and sometimes I'm managing people, like, oh, you know, as a kid, like, what do I, how do I, what do I need to do to make this feel safe, right? And so all of that being outside didn't really allow me time to just be in myself.
Because you had so many outside stimuli, and in a way, you need some peace and stability and just being there to be able to create properly, I think.
De definitely. So I still created. I wrote poetry. I wrote a lot and did different things. But oftentimes I would get pulled, whether it was a new relationship or a new country or a new, I would get pulled into the world and out of my world.
True.
And I think I needed to cultivate my world to
True.
be able to dive deeper into my own creativity.
I have goosebumps. That's so true. And
Yeah.
you cannot really create your own world unless you have some sort of distance from the outside world somehow. You have to create that distance.
Now I got the chills. Yeah, absolutely. We need to create that safety and that groundedness and just that capacity to be and to sit and to also see ourselves. Like someone once told me that I had an antenna. Like I learned how to develop a really good antenna. It's like to read what was happening, and I just needed to turn it around and put it on myself. Because I had already learned how to do it. I had the skill, I had the capacity. I just needed to turn its direction.
So
And
true.
I learned how to do that later. So the closer I came home to myself, the deeper my creativity, the more I cultivated my creativity, the further I went away from myself, whether that was in partying or escapism or whatever it might be, the further I abandoned my creativity and myself. Because I think who I am and who we are, I think everyone is creative. It is, you know, deeply connected to our creative power. And
So
I,
just before we get into your book, let's just continue a bit on your journey.
please.
So how did you go from English language arts literature into marketing? So how did that happen? And
Oh, goodness.
then
Okay.
becoming a coach eventually. So yeah.
So I wanted to use communication. That's what I would call creativity at the time, like communication for good in some way. And I had no idea how I was going to do that. Seeing my father, he's my hero and my warning sign. Because seeing him struggle to make a living as an artist in New York City kind of showed, told, as a little girl, I was given a script or saw a story play out from my little eyes, which was if you do art full time, you know, if you break out of society's prescriptive boxes, you're going to pay a rebellion tax. And I didn't want to pay that tax. It seemed like a very hard life, though I love that he did. He dealt blackjack for the mob. He was a horse and buggy driver in Central Park. He was a security guard at the Met. Like, you know, he did everything he could to paint, to do his art. And I love that I loved seeing his passion, but it came with a hefty price tag. So I think I was afraid of just saying, well, I'm gonna be a writer. And so that kind of was like, oh no, I because I equated it with that. that, oh, that must mean that I have to financially suffer or it's going to be difficult. So I was trying to figure out, like, what else can I do? So I thought maybe cultural anthropology. I did take a class, I didn't go that way. Or maybe international relations, like global affairs. Maybe there's something I can do in the international arena with communication. So I ended up doing my master's at NYU in global affairs. I never really ended up using the degree as much as directly as you would think, but it did, it showed me a lot about the world where it used to be kind of black or white, and learning so much more about how things, whether it's international political economy or so many different things, how the world works in its nuance, it just showed me a lot of gray, which was good. Because there is a lot of gray. It changed my perspective. So it's good. So from there, I actually got a, I worked for the UNDP. I ended up moving to Sri Lanka before I did my master's. I worked as a journalist. So I was like, oh, I better see if I can survive in a completely different culture first before I go down this route. So I ended up staying and working for a, as a marketing communications for Plan International, an NGO. I was working at the UNDP writing their web copy. I worked as a journalist, and it was great that early on. This is before my master's, after I finished my undergrad, to be able to have that exposure. And then I said, oh, okay, let's do global affairs. Anyway, I got a chance to work at the UNDP in their marketing and communications department after I graduated on a contract role. I had a huge loan on my back. The salary was wah, wah, wah for New York City. And I was like, I didn't know international relations. Like, you really gotta, working in the international arena, if you're just starting up, yeah, it's a little challenging. And I had an opportunity to produce an economic documentary in Bahrain. I thought, that one, let's go. Once again, let's go, right? Let's change this up. So I did that for 8 months. Ended up being not the creative playground I thought it would be. I ended up having to sell ad space to produce the documentary in the Middle East. And that was very challenging. I learned a lot and ended up leaving after 8 months, after, completing it, and going to France for a few months, and then finally finding my first agency job in London. So they actually, it was a brand agency, and they ended up hiring me because of my background. Because of my background, they had a global campaign that they were running with one of their biggest clients. And it turns out that all of my weird travels and education and, experiences and work
Your
experiences,
uniqueness.
yeah, let's call it that, made me the perfect candidate for this role. So it felt like the universe conspired in my favor. And that's what led me into the world of working in creative agencies and branding and marketing and advertising. That was my, it's a long story, but that's the story.
Yeah, but how did you move into founding your own like marketing, branding, coaching company, collective studio,
Yeah.
right?
So I did that. In London, I worked as a creative strategist, copywriter for years, let's say 4 years, and then I got a job offer in Denmark in Copenhagen to work at another agency, and I thought it sounded fantastic, so I came here again, not thinking it would become home, and worked with a great team on really exciting clients, IKEA, the big ones here, Volvo, the big, it's Carlsberg, big companies, and I did that for well over a decade, maybe 15. I think overall 15 years. And okay, so what, let me, I'm fast forwarding. And then the very last agency I worked at was a creative, a purpose-driven creative consultancy. So they were using creativity for good. So finally, full circle. I came full circle at the end working at a wonderful agency. And then I kept getting in the middle of the night, I felt like something internal poking me. Like, what would happen if you built your own business? What would happen if you channeled your creativity into building your own dream? And I was just like, shh, this is fine. This is good. I'm working in creativity. I'm getting a cushy salary. Everything is good. I didn't want to listen because I was afraid. I had no idea what my business would be, what it would look like, if where the money's coming in. And it actually took my mother's sudden passing in 2021 to shake me by the shoulders and say, hey, got this one life. What are you waiting for? It's not guaranteed. Anything can happen at any point in time. And that was one of her many, like, her passing gifts, just a reminder of this life is finite. And if not now, then when? So shortly after she passed, a month later, I quit my job and I
Wow.
jumped. I said, it's now. And I didn't know exactly what it was going to be, because I also just I did a coaching certification at the last agency I was in, because I realized that a lot of the creative consultancy work I was doing wasn't just about what we were producing or creating, but it was about facilitating leadership through change. And it was much more, there was much more of the human side of facilitation and consultancy. And a friend of mine posted something on LinkedIn that sounded phenomenal about, I don't know, raising self-awareness and all this. Woo! And she worked as a designer. She was in innovation. So coaching is also helpful in these, uncertain, navigating uncertainty. And I said, what are you doing? I met her for coffee. That sounds fascinating. And she told me that she was in this coaching program. So that piqued my interest. Ended up trying their foundational money back guarantee because it felt right for me, of course, with the Coactive Training Institute. And I fell in love for many similar reasons as I fell in love with creativity, because it's the art of transformation. Right. So it was very, but a very different way of working with people that just was so expansive for me. And so when I launched Collective Studio, I had coaching and I had my creative direction, copywriting, the usual on the side. I'm like, how do these two things even come together? Like, what am I doing? I didn't know. So I said, I don't know. Let's see. I still had some work from my old agency. I still had some coaching clients, and I just allowed it to unfold, not without anxiety.
Of course. It won't be the trip without the
Right? And then,
anxiety.
but eventually the dots started to connect. The more I just kind of also let go and say, okay, let's see, I found my way into the answers.
Yeah, true. I did an episode called Puzzle Pieces about 2 years ago, and it's simply about how life takes you from one place to the next. You don't know exactly what's going to happen, but somehow it all connects, all fits, and then suddenly you're there, and that's beautiful about life. If you trust it, and if you trust that things are going to go fine, you have to have faith, right?
Yes, I love that so much, Dada, because that's a practice that that's something I'm still practicing. I'm practicing that the more that I let go and stop pushing and driving and trying to control, it's human. I can be compassionate with myself. Life is uncertain. The more I kind of lean back, I show up, but I lean back. And I say, okay, let's see what's coming my way. And it's really beautiful. It's taken me, I'm almost 4 years into my business. A lot of the anxiety just took time to trust and to release. The only way through it, is to do it. And that's it. But it does shift. It changes. When I used to be more tighter on, oh God, and what's next? This pipeline. I'm so much looser. It's like, I still don't know. Nothing has changed externally. It's a business. Things come and go. Things are in and out. But the
But
feeling
you are the
within.
one who is changing. You're the one who is looking at differently from a different
Bingo. And
perspective.
that's changed my whole experience. It's changed
Exactly.
my whole experience. And I think that's something beautiful to remember, right?
You're listening to you talking now. I feel that this is the age for women, really women more than men, who reach this age of 40, 50, having had so many experiences before, been there, done that, failures, pain, heartache, whatever, and of course some joys, and we kind of like amalgam everything and create something new in this, I don't know, midlife stage, if you will. And it's really, and you really see it now in this era. Do you feel that, or am I the only one?
100%.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's
100%.
shifting and happening in the collective of humans. And I love it. I love that, we're able to look at to create something different. Based on our experiences, not doing the same old traditional structure, whatever, that has been enforced on us.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of this comes with age. I hope people can do it whenever they want to do it, like realizations and amalgamation and releasing and a trusting yourself, life, to realize that we're creating our experience and to lean back in it. I hope it comes at different ages, but I think you're right. For me, aging, there's a parallel between getting older and also doing the work. Like when I went through that gnarly divorce, I stumbled into my therapist's office instead of moving to Paris. She helped me with that. And I've been seeing her ever since. And I've been coached too, and I have different practices. And it's beautiful to remember that we're in community.
True. And
You
the same
know?
way you help others, you need help too, So
Absolutely.
it's a cycle, And of course, and if you don't have someone who kind of like looks you in the face and the eyes and tells you, hey, where are you going? Just, notice this, see that, you won't see it sometimes yourself. You need a mirror,
Definitely. Absolutely.
and that's how you heal, that's how you grow, and that's how you become a better person, and that's how you create what you're creating.
Absolutely. And that's why partnership for me is so important. Because we are social creatures. This is in our nature. This is how we grow and expand and mirror and reflect. And we are interconnected in so many ways. And that's why partnership is beautiful, because there are certain points in our life, well, maybe throughout our life, but especially at certain what I call sticky junctures, that partnership can change the course of everything. It's done that for me. And that's also what I want to do with other people. I'm very passionate about that.
No, I truly believe that, because you can do a lot alone, yes. But sometimes partnership, whether it's partnership in business or in romantic life, it just brings out a different you, right?
Definitely.
Because you have to see this from their perspective as well, not just yours. And so it opens you up to so many possibilities, right?
Absolutely. And for me, creativity is also a collaboration. It is 100%. We're always creating on the back of what came before, and with other people. Like, you just have to watch Hollywood or any movie, roll, to watch the credits roll. Ever watch like how many people it took to make that movie? And it's a beautiful reminder that we're always co-creating
So,
with each other and with life.
and that's how you kind of like brought your book to life, and your book is titled Welcome to the Creative Club, and I love the Creative Club part of it. It feels like you open the book and you open a door to a club. It's so nice.
Oh, I
And you wrote your book in a few months, I gathered. It didn't take you long to actually write it. So how
Oh,
long?
no. It took me it I think the whole process to like the last draft took me a year.
But a year is an
Still
amazing,
short. Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, because I read somewhere that it took you like 4 months to do a first draft.
Yeah.
So I mean, first draft in 4 months, and then you go through the editing, the copywriting, and all that to a year. But really, you did the bulk in 4 months. So wow,
Something like that. I think it could have been five.
how did you live? I want to know what this experience. How did you live these 4 months? Were you like obsessed about it? Did you like eat, breathe, drink just this book, or were you able to rest as well? I mean, how was that experience?
I think it was a little more than 4 months. I want to say it was 5 or 6, just to be candid. Like, I can't re recall exactly, but I want to say it was a bit more. But still in the scheme of things, abbreviated. What was it like? Well, first of all, I had an editor. I was a developmental editor, Shanna, that I was working. She's fantastic, fantastic. It was our partnership made such an impact in the development of myself and the story and my story. So working with her, it was like a sprint. You always had a deadline. Like, it was more about, she wasn't worried about it getting like, it has to be this way. She's like, just write, just write. That was That was the brief. Just write. Doesn't matter. Just keep writing. Just keep writing. Just keep writing. And then she would give feedback. So, I had chapters due like every couple of weeks. So it's like, okay, just write. So what I did was I had 2 days a week for writing. I took a Sunday, like a full one full weekend, because that's how it is. I also had my business. And then I took one full day. I like full days. Life doesn't always give that to you. I've been trying to teach, like, I have been teaching myself, like, even if I have 2 hours, that's fine, just to write or do something. But I do like me a full day, if possible, just to focus. So I had 2 full days, and then I thought about it in between, of course. So it's not like it wasn't alive in me. And then I also took care of business and my business and whatever else needed tending to in between. And then it got very, very, and so I was very alive in me. Luckily, my husband was doing his law degree. So he was very passionate and very busy about what he was doing. And I was very in my world of writing. And we were able to really support each other in it. I think we were very lucky because no one felt like unseen or not taken care of, because we were both busy. And sometimes we'd come out of our, rooms and be like, we're getting Thai takeaway, honey, and watching an episode of something just to prove. Yes, absolutely. So we were very much on the same page. And I'm bringing that in. Because again, it's never alone. Like, our environment, it really helps sustain us. Like, being in a loving, whether it could be a friendship, doesn't have to be, it could be a romantic partnership, could be a friendship, could be family, could be anything. But having this like nurturing soil around you while you're creating something that matters or you're moving into uncertainty, it's so important. So I'm not alone in that. We're not, we don't, it's, we don't have to be alone. And actually, the environment matters. So that was so helpful. My creativity also flourished when I made the right choices for myself, for who was in my life. Like, and my husband is definitely one of those people. So anyway, I know that feels important. So I did that, and then the story was alive. And then when I had to really buckle down was over the summer. I had 2 months where really I had to focus much more than 2 days. And here's what gets funny. So all of a sudden, most of my client contracts ended, and I had nothing in front of me. And there was a part of me that got really nervous, like, I'm not going to make any money for 2 months. What's going to happen? And should I go out and try to get new business? What should I be doing? And then another part of me said, girl, what are you doing? The universe just gave you a gift. The universe just cleared your calendar because you need these months just to focus. Are you going to accept the gift, or are you going to reject it and get busy doing things that take you away from what you're really supposed to be doing? I
True.
give myself a solid pep talk, and I said, I'm accepting the gift. I'm accepting the gift. And so sometimes when the anxiety would come up, boop, I'd go, no, we're accepting the gift. And I just focused. So those 2 months, and then of course, as life has it, when I had finished those 2 months and handed one of the drafts in, work came my way. Just another example of trust, So yeah, that was pretty much what it looked like.
Yeah, that's beautiful. You did say, and I think you mentioned a little bit before, we're born creative and then we forget. So I'd like to talk about that. And that the creativity is not for an elite. So let's talk about this concept.
So we're born creative, then we forget, and this book helps you remember. No. So I think there's a lot of different ways into this. So I'll start with one. I think when we're younger, we just play and create and do things, and we don't necessarily label ourselves as creative. Like, you're in the sandbox, you're making a castle, you're, making sculptures out of Play-Doh, you're chilling, you're just creating, you're just like doing stuff. And there's a sense of play and wonder and awe that I think as we move into the responsibilities of life, of getting older, it becomes child's creativity can become like child's play. Like, oh, we're adult now, we have to be serious. And, follow the path that's been given. We need to, whatever the cultural story is, depending where you're from, like, find the job, go to university, get good grades, find the job, get a partner, then, oh, you buy a house, you have kids. Like, there's like this path, and it feels like,
The social expectation path, I
Yeah, totally.
it's exhausting. I
It's
think right now it's
exhausting.
exhausting.
It is, and it's just a cultural story. It's a story. You can choose to run that script and follow it, or you can say, "No, I'm gonna create my own." It takes a lot of courage and like a proper dose of rebellion energy to do it, but it's very rewarding. It becomes yours. Anywho, so I think sometimes I can, suck the what came naturally. It just kind of draws some of that out as we get overwhelmed by the daily life of that path, right? So that's one thing. I think also we come to define creativity in a very narrow way, right? Creativity is often defined or solely related to artistic expression. So if you're a singer, music, painter, sculptor, what dancer, whatever, oh, then you're creative, and then everyone else is not creative. And that is a very harmful belief. It's a very harmful story because that's what stops us from being creative, is the idea, well, I'm not the creative type. If I had a dime for everyone, maybe a dollar, let's do it, or maybe $10. Anyway, I would be rich. Of course, you're natural born creative. If you're a human, you're an artist at play. It's what enabled our survival as a species. It's how our brains are wired. We are born and built to create, and I think the first step is to acknowledge and reclaim, even better, what is already ours, which is our creativity. And that's also part of the forgetting. It's another story, a part of, oh, well, this is creativity and it's not that and I'm not this. And it's like, no, of course you are.
And you do mention at one point that life is your biggest creative project. And without you realizing that you're creating, you are creating. Where you're
100%.
creating, this dull life that you have, the 9 to 5 job and going home watching Netflix and sleeping, or creating a more active life, where you're outdoors, or acting or creating, the creative life that you think is creative life. So do you want to expand a bit more on that?
Sure. Well, we're always creating, just as you just said, Dada. We're always creating. The question is, are you consciously creating? That's the big question.
Exactly.
Because we're creating our experience in every moment, right?
So
But are we conscious?
are you creating this negative vibe or the positive one, right?
Yeah, or are you actually just playing out old behaviors and stories, so that also drains creativity because it's not very creative. It's repetitive, right? You've already done it before. You're not creating anything new. But yet it's still kind of a creation because you're still the one doing it. Or are you becoming aware, just like me with my story of, do I want to move to Paris or do I want, like, I became aware that I get to choose, that I am at choice, that I get to create something different for myself. And it doesn't make it easy. I still had the impulse to, like, let's just go. And I had to be with that. Like, it's okay. It's normal, but that's just part of my experience. And then it gets quieter. But that is a conscious creation or a conscious choice. So I think that's key. To create, to for me, creativity, the definition of it also changed. For me, when I was younger and also working in commercial creativity was just something you do. After I got divorced, went into an unhealthy rebound, got fired, when a series of life events kind of just kept shaking me, trying to wake me up. And I was sitting in the apartment with my ex, wondering, how the heck am I going to put these pieces together again? Everything felt wrong. I had a choice. I could stay because I got fired. I got severance pay, but I could stay and get anxious and try to find a job and try to work on my relationship that wasn't working, that I had been working on. I could get caught in that world. Or I could take the Trans-Siberian, a bucket list desire that had been calling me for a long time. It's not escaping. It's a moment with myself again. And I chose that years ago. And I did 5 weeks by myself.
In
It had been
Siberia.
China, Mongolia, Russia.
Okay.
the train across all of those three, getting off and on. And I, in that experience, I reminded myself that life is big and beautiful, that I get to choose, and that I can create this for myself. And it was on the train when I was in Siberia, passing through Siberia on the train, you know, with the swinging socks and a Russian man drinking vodka, punching the steel car wall and the smell of sauerkraut, and just like looking around, looking outside. I had a realization in that moment that, oh, I creatively directed this. I creatively directed this whole scene. I made this happen for myself. I created this. And in that moment, my definition of creativity expanded, kind of exploded, or it's like creativity is not just something I do, it's a way of being in the world. Whoa. I'm not only a creative director at work, I'm a creative director in my life. Whoa. I brought myself here. Oh, damn. Wow. It felt very profound to me in that moment. So that was also part of my own creative redefinition and creative reclamation.
And the thing is that about being the creative director of your own life, you can become the observer. Right? You sometimes, I mean, it's beautiful if every day for like a 5 minutes or 2 minutes, you just detach and become the observer and see how your day went. And maybe say, okay, if I could edit my day, if I could edit this moment and that moment, and maybe next day I could live it better, create a better day for myself tomorrow. And if you look at it that way, then you create better tomorrows for yourself and you actually create the life you want to live. But it's baby steps, doesn't happen just like that.
No, and it can even be in this present moment right now, like asking yourself, what do I really want to, how do I want to creatively direct the next scene? I want to put on my red dress. I want to listen to this playlist. I want to feel free for a minute. I want to dance, like whatever it can be. It's just a reminder that we get to choose. We get to creatively direct that. And it could start in the small. It doesn't have to be your whole life in a minute.
So true. And you also said creativity is a transformation act or a transformative act from pain to purpose. I love that, from pain to purpose, because people sometimes hate that they feel pain in their lives, they have like dark moments, but without pain, you can't appreciate the pleasure. You cannot find what it is that you want that makes you happy or joyful, or I don't know if you want to use the word happy because people are against using the word happy these days. But yeah, I mean, living in positivity, let's say. So, and definitely your story did come from a lot of pain, right? And from pain, you found your purpose, and that's amazing.
Definitely. And I would add a third leg to that, from pain to purpose, from purpose to pleasure.
Oh, that's even better. True.
Right? Because I'm learning like that I also get to please myself and feel pleasure and enjoy it, but I also need to learn how to receive. And that's a beautiful practice, you know, just to sit and receive life, like just be in it, because we're able not only to create moments, but we have to be able to sit in them and receive them. And that's a big one.
Today I just went on Instagram and I follow, I think her name is Mama Gina, but I'm not sure. And she said that inside each woman, there is a negi, like this little voice that's negative that relives all your, failures. Oh, if I'm like this, I'm like unlucky in love and I have had all these bad scenarios in love. I've been unlucky at work and I've had all these bad. And so you play them in your head all the time and it's all negative, negative, negative that you're playing. And then how can you find pleasure if you stay in that? And she said something interesting to like materialize this Negi in your head, bring it to life into this woman in front of you, and just accept it. Accept that you have this because you like to self-sabotage in a way that, like, our pain is our pleasure sometimes. We forget that, but we get used to the pain, and it kind of comforts us.
True.
So put this pain and this negativity in this person and face it and embrace it and treat it like something separate from you and get out of that state. What do you think of that concept? It's like, I found it very interesting, and it really fits in what you within what you say.
Well, the Negi to me is also and you know what we what's called an inner saboteur. And we all have inner saboteurs. There was a lot of research done. Shireen, if I always mispronounce this. Shiraz, I can share the link. He actually has a quiz to take, like which saboteurs are most present in you. We all have a judge. Based on his research, we all have a judge. Everyone shares that saboteur. And then their saboteurs usually have sidekicks. So like the controller, the hypervigilant, it depends on how you grew up. And saboteurs were usually developed in childhood as a response or a way to protect against perceived or actual threat. So at one point, that Negi, whatever you want to call it, or the saboteur, helped you. It either protected you in some way, but it no longer serves. It's past its due date. Now it does the opposite. Now it actually blocks us or stops us from feeling pleasure or stops us from enjoying. So that's what came up for me. And then, you know, just being able to become aware of the voice. We have different voices. We have a wise, intuitive voice, and then we also have Negi. Just becoming aware of who's in the room. Oh, it's the inner saboteur, the Negi that just came in. Okay, I can, and learning how do you know that's the voice? Oh, it sounds like pinched, or you know, you can personify it, or it's this, it's that. So when it comes up, you get to choose how you want to deal with it. My choice when my Negi comes up is okay. It's okay. Thank you for trying to protect me. Thank you.
Yeah,
You know, thank you.
definitely.
But
Definitely.
I don't need you anymore. You can go out and go on the beach. I want to retire my Negi, you know, or just remind it that it can go and swim in the waves, be in a Corona ad, you know, with the have a piña colada. I don't need it anymore. It can, you know, I don't need to kill it, but I can retire it, or I can be with it when it shows up. Sometimes the Negi is also another part, our inner little girl or little boy that comes up and is scared about something. So it's like, what is it that part of me need? So I think it's compassion, because resisting it and saying, I don't want this, then it just strengthens it. So there's a reason it came up. Why don't you, let's get curious instead about why is this here? Why is it here now? That's such a great curiosity. Wow, is a beautiful practice to be curious about yourself instead of judgmental. Like, oh, here I am being negative again. That's not helpful, right? It's just judging you. It's being negative towards your negativity. So that's just not helpful. Instead of getting curious, because I think sometimes those inner saboteurs, not sometimes, my experience and also through my clients, they come up when you're about to do something really big. They come up when you're on the precipice of change. You're about to jump. You're about to go towards something that has a lot of meaning for you, and it's scary. And sometimes that inner saboteur will come and say, hey, no, where you going? Come back, come back. Let's relax. You might fail. It might not work out. You don't want to go there. You just want to hang with me on the couch. Thanks for trying to protect me, but I got this. We're good. We're moving. You can come, but you're going to sit in the back seat. You're not driving. You ain't sitting beside me. And usually that voice is fear. So anyway, that's a whole bunch of words around what I think about what you just shared.
No, but it's so cool.
But those are my feelings with it. And again, it's to me about becoming aware, recognizing it, and then making a conscious choice about how you want to be with it, because it's there. And getting curious, why did it come up now? It's a really fascinating question. Why is it here now?
What triggered it?
Exactly.
Exactly, what's going to
Exactly.
trigger?
There's data in, there's insight in there as well. So rather than like demonize it, it's like, oh, there's some there's some insight here about myself. Like, why did it come up now? Oh, maybe, oh, because I'm about to do something that matter. Oh, and then there's more compassion that can come in to the space.
And then the other killer of creativity is comparing yourself to other people, thinking that, oh, they've done so much, I can't do that. And then you also say something beautiful. Your path is the only one that will work for you. So you have a unique path. So let's talk about that, about comparison and about your path.
Well, comparison is a, yeah, is definitely a creativity killer because social media plays into this. Because I think when we see on social media, people show the end result. They show the beautiful, shiny thing, whatever it might be. You don't see the process. You don't see everything it took, the fails, the highs, the lows, the sweat, the tears, the laughter. You don't see the whole process or how long it took. You just see the finished product. So I think sometimes it can be easy to compare and go, oh, look at that person. They just did that. And usually it's like, no, they didn't just do that. They probably spent a year or 2 years, going through a lot of different things, but we often don't share or talk about the process, and which is, I love hearing about people's journeys and process. It changes, it shifts us away, I think, from comparison and again makes us more curious. So I think that plays a part. To the your own path thing, comparison also comes up because it could be easy to be like, well, that person did it that way and they got success, right? So if I just do what that person did, then I will too be successful. That doesn't work. That's a shortcut, right? The real work is figuring out what success feels and looks like to you. That's their answer, not so it's not yours. We can learn from people, of course, but really it takes us to go back into our inner world, right? Into who we are and to get curious to figure out, well, what's the path I want to go down? What's the kind of life I want to inhabit? What is like really, what does success look like to me? More importantly, what does it feel like? What's the feeling that I'm after? Like, what is it? And getting very curious and then trusting yourself and having some of that rebellious energy to find your own way. And to trust that if it doesn't look like anyone else is out there, which can feel scary, it's like, I don't see anyone else doing this thing, then great. That means you're on your own path because your path is not going to look like anybody else's because it's yours. And that takes a lot of courage. So I understand, and I've done that before too, where it's like, oh, let me just follow the tips of A, B, and C, and then whoo, I'm there. And
Doesn't
that's
work
this,
that
so
way.
that's someone else's answer. It's someone else's journey.
You know, you brought up the word rebellion a couple of times as you were talking, and unfortunately, I was from my life, I've been accused of being a rebel.
Oh, that's a compliment.
But it's usually people say it in a negative way, you know? Like, I got a couple of tattoos. Oh, you're the rebel, you know, like against society, as if, you know, I'm like, you know, I'm not gonna be accepting of whatever is the norm, or, and then whatever you do, you know, oh, you're just rebellious. Or, so yeah, how can we view rebellion as something beautiful? I want to change this concept in people's minds. How can we view rebellion as something positive and beautiful for the individual?
Oh, I think it's so positive and beautiful. Rebellion is refusing to eat what's put in front of you, refusing to listen to the stories or follow the stories or prescriptive paths or scripts that we're given. Rebellion is curiosity, it's questioning, it's exploring. It's not just doing what we're told or doing what we think where people tell us we should do, those damn shoulds. So rebellion to me is an act of self-reclamation. It's an act of, I am not going to necessarily do things how anyone else tells me. I'm going to figure out how I want to do them, how I want to do this thing called life. And that is so powerful and so beautiful because then we inspire each other. Imagine a world where people have a healthy dose of rebellion that inspires their own creative journey, that inspires them to write their own scripts, go on their own paths, to do things differently that might fall out of the common or the traditional, that does probably fall out of all those things. Imagine how colorful and beautiful and diverse and interesting this life would be to be able to observe everyone's, different version of life. I just love that idea. And there's so many examples of people doing that. They're saying, ha, I'm not following that. I'm going to write my own damn script and I'm going to find my own way. And so, and I think that's so inspiring. And I think that's what the world needs. We need more of that. We need more of that color and flavor. It's flavorful. We don't want to eat the same bland Wonder Bread dish. Everyone, I mean, that's what is that? We want caviar and fried chicken and, all of the different creative permutations that we can create and make out of life. Woo! So to me, rebellion is such a positive thing because it's saying it's refusing to eat what you're served. If you, especially if it doesn't sit well with you, and going, no, I'm going to cook my own dish and it's going to taste delicious. And then we can inspire each other. Oh my God, they used that spice for that dish. I think I'm going to use some cinnamon in my dish and I'm going to add thing. And then we end up growing together and shifting and creatively evolving together. So man, give me some rebellion spice any day.
You did it. You gave us the new definition of rebellion. Now, what is next? You did a book tour kind of a bit around, or like you really promote your book beginning of this year. What is next on the list? Is there another book in the on the horizon, or you're not you're ready yet to think about it, or
Well, the audiobook launches in a week, and I narrated that myself,
that is
which was
amazing.
another big new first. That was a
Tell us about it.
beautiful.
Tell us about how the audiobook went.
Well, it's a deeply personal book, in service of people and the story. So it felt like the only person that could narrate that was me. And I've never narrated a book before. So I created like a makeshift fort in my room, or basically where I'm sitting, and I bought room dividers and put a blanket on top and mic and everything. And I just recorded, at home. I also had help. I had a producer. But the first few chapters, listening to the sound of my own voice was just like, like what? And then something really cool happened by like chapter 12, like in the middle of the book somewhere, I started to like the way my voice sounded for the first time in my whole life. That was just, and I started to have fun with it. It was interesting to observe myself because in the process, in the beginning, the perfectionist was in the room. She was in the room because I was doing something new and it felt a bit scary and I wanted to get it right. And the more that I tried to get it right, the more that I repeated a line and tripped over and got harder on myself and come on, get this, the worse it got. Like the more I tripped up. And so eventually I had to ease up. I eased up. I was like, this is not fun. Reminder, I'm creatively directing this experience and it's not fun. So who's going to change that? Me. I'm not going to do it this way. This is killing me. The pressure. I'm putting so much pressure on myself. Then I had another talk with myself. We're going to have fun with this. We're going to chill out. We're going to have fun and play and imagine the energy that I want to bring to it. And it doesn't matter if I make a mistake and trip up. We're going to change this. And I did. And you see, that's what I mean. It's just getting aware of like, oh, this is experience is really not enjoyable. Okay, well, who's creating it? Me. So who can change it? Me. And it sometimes it's just we have to go through the process. So it became more fun. And interestingly enough, the more fun it became, the better it was. The better I sounded because I'm having fun with it. I'm not like, oh, you could feel the energy in someone's voice,
I
right?
know what you mean.
So it was cool. So I did that. Now it's about to release next week. And then
Will it be on Audible?
Audible. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Audible, iTunes, and Amazon, but connected to
Oh,
Audible. So
great.
same, same. So interestingly enough, the book has brought like you, which I'm so grateful for, many fascinating, wonderful humans into my world, which I never expected. I didn't think that would be a byproduct of the book. And I ended up meeting through the book a very talented musician and artist named Tyler, who we developed a friendship, and then at right around the same time had the idea of what if we took the poems out of the book, because there are 11 poems in the book, and he created a musical, like a track for each one.
Oh, wow.
And it has
That's
been
beautiful.
such a fun co-creation. Like when I tell you, because all of a sudden it becomes something else, right? Like the poem that I read, hearing someone else interpret it through music and then have a track and then putting it together, it's like a whole new thing. And it was just so enriching and fulfilling an experience to co-create like this. It was and fun. So we're going to be launching the spoken word album using the poems from the
Beautiful.
story on Spotify coming at the in summer sometime.
Is
We're
it
getting
going to
there.
be like subscription based, or it's going to be free for everybody?
It's going to be free. It's just it's
Oh,
a
it's so lovely of you to give
yeah.
something to the audience. I mean, that's nice
Yeah.
to give it for free.
And hopefully they jam to it so you hear the words and like the the music is composed for the mood and the vibe and the feeling. And that's the beautiful thing about poetry. It's not analytical, it's like felt. So you can feel it through different senses.
And that's what's beautiful, creativity and the creative journey. You think you're doing one thing, then you end up doing 10 things, and they're different things, and you didn't expect to get there, but then you do, and then it's amazing. It's beautiful.
It's so amazing, and that's why being open to it and like letting go of expectation or letting go of outcome and just kind of reminding ourselves to enjoy and have pleasure from the process of creating and getting curious about why are we drawn to do that thing and not that thing and going with it and allowing things to just emerge has been so delightful. It's really, and so this just emerged, this opportunity, and it just kind of unfolded. And so once that's done, then welcome to the Creative Club. Like the package will be complete. And then I would love to write another book, maybe in January. Fiction this time. I have no idea what it would be. I had a title that came to my mind, so that's interesting. And we'll see. The editor that I'm supposed to work with, whomever that might be, I trust will come into my life to help me write that book.
Amazing. Yeah, it's been a pleasure having you on Quite So. It's I mean, eye-opening, fun, light, and so constructive and instructive.
Yay. Thank you so much, Dada, for having me. Your energy, your laughter, your insights, connection, conversation. It's shining so bright, and it's been such a joy to travel to all these interesting, different places we've been to together in just this one episode. And I hope people get whatever they might need from it.
Yes, I hope so too. Anyway, we're following each other on Instagram, and we'll keep in touch definitely. I mean, I would love to keep in touch with you, of
I
course.
would love to too, big
I
time. Are you on LinkedIn at all?
am. I followed you today on LinkedIn as
Okay,
well,
good.
so you
Because
can
that's
check it
also,
out.
yeah, and definitely, I would love to keep in touch.